You are listening to the preaching ministry of Faith Baptist Church.
Whenever we bless God and thank God for our food, we are giving thanks. And here's our key thought throughout this month. When you give thanks to God, you actually reverse the process and you uncover, you magnify, you expose His greatness and His goodness. But there's another way that we need to be reminded to uncover the greatness and the goodness of God. And that is by thanking Him for the Christian people in our lives. Thank God for the Christian people in your life. Now, before we talk about this, we have to talk about another common problem that we all have. It's a relationship problem. And let me explain how this has worked for me at one time in my life, and you can apply this to many scenarios. When I went to college, each semester, I would show up, and they would assign me a dormitory. I would go to that dormitory, I would move into my room, and I would unpack my stuff and take the bunk or the bed below. And for the next couple of weeks, I would get to know my roommates. This is a Christian college, and so everybody who came had a profession of being saved and a desire to serve God somehow, some way. That was the purpose of this college. And so these were Christian roommates. They would come in, and we'd get to know each other. We would study and cram for quizzes together. We would play ball together. We would pray at night together before we went to bed, and sometimes we would do Bible studies at night together. We'd even go out and pass out gospel tracts together and witness to people and meet people, talk to them about Jesus together. And you would say, well, this is a Christian Bible college, and these people wanted to serve God, and so that must have been like heaven. You probably got along all the time together as Christian brothers and sisters in Christ, and you were just serving God with joy, loving each other all the time, right? Well, after a few weeks, you would get to know each other. And the more that we got to know each other, the more the problem that I want to talk to you about right now would come into focus. The first couple of years of college, I didn't have a car. I was depending on my roommates' cars to get to and from school. I had two primary roommates that would help me with this. The first, his name was Josh. Josh today is a very faithful pastor out in Castle Rock, Colorado. You can go Google and try to see who this guy is. We were in a room together, and he had an old Buick LeSabre, if you know what that is. The engines run forever. The cars look terrible. And he had an old Buick LeSabre. It was kind of falling apart, but it ran. It worked. The wheels worked, and we got to the school in the morning. This car was kind of an old thing, and when you got in the wintertime in Wisconsin, that was a lot. You got into the wintertime, if you turned the heat on, however that car worked or didn't work, snow would actually blow in through the vents into the cabin. Little flurries coming in there in the wintertime. I think the back shocks were out, and so it would ride like this, and we'd go in this old Buick LeSabre. The problem with this was it was not that we didn't get to school. I would jump in that front passenger seat with him, but he had this knack, this tendency to always leave at the last possible second and to get to class. And in that school, you got demerits if you showed up late. And eventually you'd have to go to the dean's office and talk to them if you were late too many times. It was not good to be late. Well, every time I went to school with him, it was this adventure. Are we going to make it in time? I was ready in time, but I couldn't get there in time. I was depending on him. We'd either get in just in time, or we would get in just a couple minutes late. And he'd come running in and barely had his tie on. He'd come sliding in. Well, that was a little bit frustrating. Now, I had another roommate, and his name was Ben. Ben is a managing accountant for Hertz today, and he is, as I understand, in Oklahoma, being a very, very good Christian man and a good fellow. But this man had a Jeep. It was a nice Jeep. It was he kept it in immaculate condition. It was pristine. Very opposite situation from Josh. And in another way, it was opposite as well, because he was another ride I had to school, but can you guess? he would always show up as early as possible. He would get up as soon as possible, get in his car as soon as possible, and drive that Jeep all the way to school and get in as soon as the doors open so that he'd have a full hour to study and to prepare and to be ready for class. Well, I was usually ready before Josh, but not in time for Ben. And so this was a perpetual problem. These are good fellows, good guys. I'm not sure who was frustrated the most, if I was frustrated with them more or if they were frustrated with this third roommate who neither one was sure who was responsible to help me out. And so we had this situation. You fast forward a couple of years. I hit my junior year, and I told my dad, you know, this is getting frustrating, and I'm probably frustrating to other people. And so we worked it out, and I went to school with my own car. I had a 1995 turquoise Ford Escort, and tried to take really good care of it. I was more like Ben in that way, and would really take care of my car. Well, now I'm on the other side of the driver's seat, right? And I have students now needing rides with me. And so out of the goodness of my heart and a sense of duty to my own past history, I would try to provide that to other people. And so now I have to decide, do I insist that they get up and leave when I leave, or do I wait around for them and wait for them to be ready and take them in, or do I let them just eat it and stay at the dorm and be late? Well, I had to work this all through, and I thought I did a pretty good job, but then you had things happen like what happened with another roommate named Bobby. Now, Bobby was a really good fella. Today, he's a very God-loving preacher. He lives in Wisconsin. He's a preacher. He loves God. He's doing a really good thing. And yet, in college, he tended to be a little late getting out, and he was riding with me. It all kind of came to a head for me one morning when it was the dead of winter. The roads were a mess. I had to get to school. The windows were all fogging up, and my defrost wasn't working quite right. And I had this little Ford Escort, and I had three other guys, and so the thing was sitting down low, and they would just get in and throw their snow everywhere. That, to me, knock your shoes off when you get in the car and put them in carefully. I don't want road salt flying all over my car. I've got to take care of this thing. And I can't lecture them in that every single time they get in my car. We're in. Then they close the door. Bang! Slam it. Please don't slam the door in my car. Slam the door. Well, we're through all this. We're driving. And I look in my rearview mirror. Bobby's back there opening up his bathroom bag. And he decided to start shaving in the back of my car. This is a little Ford Escort. This isn't a minivan or an Econoline, right? We're all packed in like this, jammed in together, and the windows are already defrosting up. We're all packed in, our bags and our coats, and he's opening his bathroom bag. He's trying to shave in the back seat of my car. Okay. Well, after that, he puts that away, and I'm going to be a very good Christian. I'm not going to say anything about this situation and not sin. Well, then he gets out his bathroom bag again, and he gets out his toothpaste tube and his toothbrush, and he proceeds to brush his teeth. And I'm thinking to myself, what do I do? What do I say? What's he going to do after he's done brushing his teeth? What's he going to do with that? And so he decided to roll the window down and spit it out the window at a stoplight. I really honestly forget what happened after that. I'm pretty sure I talk to him. I don't know how I talked to him, when I talked to him, what I said to him. But it never happened again. I think I did give him rides again, but I don't think he did the vanity sink thing in the back seat of my car. Well, life has a way of all playing out as it should in the end, right? One day, that same Bobby, his dad, came to school, and it was the same day that some other new students were coming to check out the school, and so I was a leader in the dormitories, and I was showing these new students around and introducing them and orienting them to this school. And so I was focused on PR. And I took them out to get into my car, and I forgot that Bobby's dad had showed up to surprise him at school, and he had rented a brand new Jaguar, and he was parked right behind me in the driveway at the dormitory. And so these new students who were not even enrolled yet, they're checking out the school, were going with me, the leader of the students in the dormitory, and I got into my car and I'm showing them around, and I put the car in reverse and I back up, bang! We got prospective students sitting here, and oh, this is really bad PR. I looked in my mirror, it was a brand new Jaguar. And I got out, there's a little scratch in the bumper. I'm thinking, God, this is just divine justice. So I had to go in and tell Bobby, I just ran into your dad's Jaguar that he rented. Now, he had good renter's insurance, and everything turned out just fine. He still reminds me about that every now and then. Hey, remember that? Yeah, I remember that. Can you get over that? I'm telling you this story just to bring up a common relationship problem that we all have. This problem is, let me put it this way. As you get to know people, other Christians, you move from enthusiasm sometimes to acceptance. From friendship to frustration. Are you familiar with this scenario? In life, you meet a new Christian. And you're excited. I made a new friend. I met a new church family. This new person is coming, and I'm very excited to get to know them. And they seem like they're on really fire for God. And I'm excited. We can make it a little bit more intimate and say, hey, I met this lady, man, and she's a really godly Christian lady, and I can't wait to marry her. It's going to be like heaven. She's so perfect. And ladies, you meet this man, and you didn't think such a man existed. He's just so nice, and he's so polite. He's a Christian man. I mean, in New York City, I mean, just stop right there. It must be good. So you get married, and you're excited. Wish Christian and Laura were here. For about a month. And then you start realizing, you know, how, you have different bathroom habits, and you have different kitchen habits, and you have, just the list goes on, and you have to figure out how to work this out. You go from introduction to enthusiasm. You're very excited, and you go out to eat, or you have this person to your house, and you're texting them. You think, this is my bosom buddy. This is my BFF that I've always been looking for. This is it. It's a really good Christian guy, really good Christian friend. I hope they keep coming to church. I hope they join. I hope they get involved. And, well, over time, you get to know each other. David and Letitia just joined the church. They've been around for a little year. You're going to get to know them. They're going to get to know you if we're doing church properly. The church should not be a place where you come, show up, show off, and go. It should be a place where you actually really do get to know each other, like guys in a dormitory at a Christian school. You should really get to know each other. But there's dangers that come with that. You go from introduction to enthusiasm, too, and you don't always sense when this happens. It happens. But you can't usually put a day and time on it. It just happens where you move from enthusiasm to toleration. And it's not negative. You're just not enthusiastic like you used to be. Now, you were married for 3 years and you were excited, but, you know, now you're married for 4 years and that's good. We made it to 10. You start talking like, oh, we made it to 10, or I hope we can make it to 20. It starts to go into this toleration stage where you start putting up with waiting for someone new who's exciting and putting up with everybody else, and you move from toleration. Then at some point you think, wait a minute. You catch yourself tolerating people because now all of a sudden you're getting frustrated with them. And you realize, yeah, that the things that I started learning about them are not changing, and now that's bothering me because they keep saying the same thing to me every time I come. They keep acting in the same way. They always have that same attitude. When is that going to stop? And you start getting frustrated, like me with the guys in the dormitory. Or spouses, right? You know, when are they going to stop? And this is the time, frustration about when you're starting to say, maybe we should call pastor and get some marriage counseling. You start thinking about it. Not usually when you do it, but it's when you start thinking about it. This happens in a church body. Then you go from frustration to just this adjective to exasperation. Oh, I don't know what I'm going to do. In a marriage, this is when you start saying, you know, one of us has got to call, and one of you just pick up the phone and call, and you get some marriage counseling. Or this is when you start thinking, I should start looking for another church, or I should just stop going, because why should I go? Because it's just not genuine anymore. These people have problems, and I just can't keep doing this. You get exasperated. Sometimes it doesn't always get to this point, but you go from exasperation to rejection, and you find a way to cut that person out of your life because you can't take it anymore. And don't forget, there was a time you were excited to know them. This happens in our lives. We get excited. And why do we have these high expectations? Why are we talking about Christian relationships today, not just people in general? Well, we have high expectations for one another, don't we? Because we have been saved. We know Jesus Christ as our Savior, and we know enough to know that we're supposed to be like Jesus. And that's what Christian means, a little Christ. And so we're expecting that of each other. Now we know we're not all perfect. We're glad to throw that disclaimer in, but we kind of hope that we don't do that too much. We're expecting a really, really, really good person. Did you know that even Paul faced this process, this relationship dilemma with other Christians in the New Testament? Did you know that most of the letters that Paul wrote in the New Testament were written to solve problems? Most of the letters in the New Testament were not written because Paul sat down and said, I know some really nice people. And so I'm going to write them a really nice letter because they're just so amazing over there. And so I'm going to write this great letter to this great church who's doing great things because this is just a great situation. Most of the letters that are written in the New Testament are written because there was a church that had problems and he needed to talk to them about those problems. Now, we read them today kind of in a neutral way. This is a really nice letter. It really encourages me. Or I like this one passage in this book because it's very interesting or insightful or has deep theology or really speaks to my heart. But it was written in most cases to address a problem. Some of those problems were moral problems. They had sexual problems or behavioral problems that were very, very bad. Some of the problems he was writing to fix were theological problems. People were believing wrong and following wrong teaching. Some of the problems were relational problems. People weren't getting along in the church. They were having arguments and opinion differences and having little tiffs between each other and dividing them. That's what Paul was dealing with in the very first century, which, if you were Paul, and you were going to write letters to these churches that you knew, he knew most of these people, or at least some of the people in some of these churches, and in many of these churches, he had actually invested months, years of his time into them. His own everyday life was just devoted to them in many of these cases. People he loved, people he had connections with, that he prayed for. How would you open your letters? One of the reasons we forget that most of the letters that Paul wrote were written to address problems is because he doesn't generally open his letters with that kind of a message. He doesn't generally open the message, the letter, saying, I am so frustrated right now that I have to be writing to you. This should not be happening. I'm so upset right now. We have talked about this before, and here we go again. Now, there's a lot of problems that you have. And let me just set the record straight. This is not how he starts his letters. Let me show you how he starts his letters. Romans chapter 1 and verse 8. Just a few verses in. I thank my God through Jesus Christ for you all. Notice Ephesians 1, 15 to 16. I do not cease to give thanks for you. Notice Philippians 1, 3. This was a church that had some personality, relationship, social problems going on. I thank my God upon every remembrance of you. Which is fascinating, which means despite the problems he's trying to solve, whenever these people come to mind, he's thankful. That's his feeling. That's his thought. He's thankful. You have other Christians in your life that when they come to mind, there's reasons why you're frustrated. And that thing they said to you last time comes to mind, or the way that they behave all the time comes to mind. And you can honestly say, when that Christian comes to mind, I am not immediately just, oh, thank you for that person, God, in my mind. Anyone like that? Don't raise your hand. Not Paul. Colossians 1:3, he says, we give thanks to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ for you. 1 Thessalonians 1:2, we give thanks to God always for you all. 1 Corinthians 1:4. I thank my God always concerning you. And this is the one I really want to focus on today, Corinthians. Because the church at Corinth had perhaps the most severe set of problems of all the churches that he wrote to. And if Paul got a pass for not saying and feeling something like this for a church, it would be this church. we would all sympathize with him for that. Because, let me show you some of the things. There were too many things for me to put in one slide. If I had put all of the problems on one slide, you wouldn't have been able to read it. How many of you love PowerPoint slides with all kinds of text in small font jumbled on, right? I don't either. So we're going to do two slides. They had so many problems. They had divisions over their favorite preachers. Oh, I like this preacher better. I like that preacher. He really preaches better. This guy is preaching. And they were divided into groups over which preacher they preferred. They had jealousy towards one another. They were envious and jealous of each other's situations and abilities. They had ongoing arguments with each other. There was sexual immorality that everyone seemed to know about. In particular, there was one man in the church who was committing incest and refused to apologize about it. And Paul even said, look, not even people who aren't Christians do that. Even lost people know that's wrong. And he would just keep coming to church every Sunday like everything was just fine. There was also some other things going on. Apparently there was some they were still doing something with prostitution, which was a big problem in the city of Corinth. But Paul talks about some of this was still a problem that was going on. Their former lives were still carrying over into their Christian lives. It was a problem. They were filing lawsuits against each other. Down at the local court, there would be a defendant, and there would be a prosecution. And on the prosecution side was ex-member of Corinthian church. And on the defense side was Y-member of Corinthian church. Aren't these people Christians? Don't they go to the same church? Why are they in lawsuits against each other? And that was happening. Can you imagine? Imagine coming to church and all those things are happening at Faith Baptist Church. You all have your favorite preachers. You're all jealous of each other. And yet you're coming and you're doing church. And this guy, Brother Sam, he's not at all, filing a lawsuit against Brother David. And David is upset at Sam because he's defending against this lawsuit. And there's other problems, moral problems going on. And no one's doing anything about it. That's what was going on. They had ongoing issues with idolatry. There were divisions over their economic status. They would observe fellowship meals and the Lord's table. They'd come together. The people with the really nice food from Whole Foods would sit down together over here. And the other people who had bought their food from Aldi would be sitting over here. And then the people who didn't have money were using their government cards to buy food. Everyone seemed to know who they were, and they put them over here and wouldn't share anything with them. And then some people would come in, they didn't have any money, didn't have any food, so they'd sit over here. And there was no sharing, no fellowship going on. You knew people's economic status by how they sat at eating times. It's terrible. They had a careless, sloppy approach to the Lord's table. There was competition over spiritual gifts. Who's the better teacher? Who gives more? Who's more merciful? And who should get to talk more? There was chaotic, confusing worship services. Everyone was talking all the time. No one was sure who was supposed to have the mic. Practical conflicts and doctrinal questions, too many to keep listing out. There were several of those as well. And how does Paul begin his letter to them? I am thankful for you to God. And he meant it. He wasn't just saying it as a technicality because he learned how to do that in elementary school in a form letter. You remember that in school, you learn how to write a letter, you put the address up here, and then you do so many spaces and you put the addressee right here. Dear sir or dear ma'am or what to whom it may concern, and then you put a colon or whatever. Then you write the body and the introduction and the meat and then the conclusion. You'd be very polite at the end. Most sincerely, and then you space so you can sign, you put the name. That's not what Paul was doing. I have to, right? I have to say this. I learned how to do this in synagogue school. You say, I'm thankful for you. My mom taught me to say thank you. No, he actually meant it. And yet, this church had so many problems. This was the man who walked into Corinth one day, and there wasn't a church. This is the man who labored and invested in people's lives, and a church started. This is the man who had developed relationships with people in this church, had worked overtime, had invested his life and his sweat and his tears in them. This is the same one that some of us learned recently, though the more abundantly I love you, the less I be loved. I very gladly will spend and be spent and exhausted for you till the money runs out. That's how much I care about you. And they still were behaving like this. And he says, I am so thankful for you. If you were Paul, is that how you would have begun? Let me tell you two ways that we cover up God in the way that we handle our relationships with other Christians. Because when you follow the process that I explained earlier, you cover up God by not being thankful for the other Christians in your lives. And we fall into this and we don't realize we're doing it. We're hiding God, where God should be most visible. First of all, at the most basic level, we ignore the ways that people, other Christians specifically, naturally reflect God's glory. And I think we forget about this. Did you know that every single human being, even if they're not a Christian, reflect the glory of God somehow? Genesis chapter 1, verses 26 to 28 tell us about this. God says, let us make man in our own image. After our image and likeness, let us make them. And he made a man and he made a woman in his image and in his likeness. Which means that it doesn't mean that we're supposed to be God. It means that we're supposed to be like him. It means that people should be able to observe any human being's life and manner and appearance and behavior and say, I can see what God is like. And that's what happens, right? How many of you, in your mind, can think of a Christian person, maybe in your family or in this church, that bothers you? You can kind of think back to when you got to know them first and thought they were pretty cool Christian and very nice. And the more you got to know them, the more you realized this person has a few problems. And at first you were optimistic they'd figure that out and they would solve those problems because they did bother you and they looked bad. And here you are several years later or months later and you realize they don't seem to be changing. They just keep being like this. What I want you to do is, if you have a person like that in your mind, just keep it in your mind. But I don't think it's hard for probably any of us to think a little bit about that. I want you to take someone like that, and I want you to ask a different question. I want you to set their weaknesses and flaws aside. Because guess what? You might be in somebody's mind right now. So you're like, all right, let's please, if it is me, please set those thoughts aside. Fact. Some of you could be thinking about me right now. So set those thoughts aside and ask another question. Lord, I haven't thought about them like this for a very long time. But can you remind me of some ways that they do reflect your glory? What is something that I have forgotten about, or I really at first appreciated, and I've forgotten that I appreciated this because the other things started becoming bigger to me. I started magnifying, glorifying their flaws and failures, and I have stopped magnifying you. And they were created physically as a human being to reflect you and their personality and their abilities. Even before they were a Christian, this was true. Maybe there's something about their personality, the way they carry themselves, that is very positive. It's very good, and it's very like God, and it reminds you of his goodness and his greatness. And you stopped seeing that. Parents with children, sometimes there's that one behavior problem that you're working on, and it doesn't stop, and they keep coming home from school with the same reports. Or at home, they keep doing this. But step back and say, wait a minute, but my kid is a very special person, and there are some very special qualities that I think I've forgotten to think about lately, that when they're not doing this, they are like this too. And even when they're doing this, they're still like this at the same time. There's that part of them, and it's really, really neat. And it's like God. There's not another animal or tree or bush in the world that's like that. Just my kid, and they show me what God is like, the way that they were made. That's why they're special to me. Think about that person, that Christian, that way. Learn to look at people, other Christians that you know, not looking for their problems, but looking for the ways they show you what God is like, just in the way they're made. Just in the way they're made. How many museums in the world are filled with things like this? Statues from a bygone era, from thousands of years ago. We don't go to museums, right, and do this. Ah! The nose is off. The eyes are missing. Where's the mouth? That's horrible. Why would I even look at that? What are they doing to me? Did you know, by the way, that all of these white statues used to be filled with color? They were painted. They had vibrant colors painted all over them. And there's technology now that they can actually analyze the surface of these statues and very well figure out what the original colors were. And they can do a rendering of what the colors were. Bright colors, very beautiful. It didn't look like this even without the cracks. It wasn't just a white. It was actually, back in those days, you'd walk around and see colorful statues everywhere, filled with color and beauty. And we look at them, the paint's all gone, and some of the body parts are missing. This is the head, or like part of the head, or something like that. The whole back is like chopped off too, of one of the ancient Greek goddesses. And I saw this yesterday, just this, online, selling for $24,000. You look at something like this, and you're supposed to say, "Not, oh, it's missed. I can't believe this is still around. Wow. You know, 2,000 years ago, and we still have this? Who was the person who made it? Was it a man or a woman? They must have been really good, because how do you take a chisel and get such smooth features and make it look so lifelike, and the expression, the emotion that's there? By the time I get done even doing any kind of carving or clay, it looks like this disfigured demon creature. And it was supposed to be my wife, but it's not even anything like it. I can't even sketch a head without it looking scary. How do you do that with stone? And there are people who walk up and pay $24,000 for something like that. Then there's something like this. The head of an ancient Greek athlete. He actually has his whole head, apparently. But pieces of his face are missing. This part of his nose and nostril is chipped off. He's not a god. He's just an athlete, an unnamed athlete. This is like LeBron James of the Greek era, right here. Right? I don't know. Did you know that these people were not white? You know that? Their statues are white. But some of them were actually very dark-skinned or tan-skinned or olive-skinned in most cases, not white. The statues are white today. So you should be asking questions like, what was the original skin color? Who was this person? Were they famous? Or is this just a generic athlete? This head, yesterday I saw it online, is selling for $88,000. I'm bringing this up because God made you in His image and in His likeness. And I think we forget the value of a person. All we see is the nose missing and the eye chipped out and this part of the ear fell off over time. And the color's missing and it's just like bland. This person is just bland and the color is missing that used to be there. And it's time-worn and it's been through the battle scars of history. And we look at it and we're not amazed that this person is standing in front of us. We're not drawn to the beauty that is still there even though sin is really messing it up. There's still beauty there. There's still a personality there. And even that person who really rubs you the wrong way, deep down inside, they really don't want to. And there's this thing going on. There's this part of them that's like, God, it's how they were made. They're worth an infinite value to God. And we walk around church like a museum and complain about all the missing noses and color. And we should be saying, wow, this person is worth so much to me. That person means so much to me. And that's why when Paul opens a letter to these people in Corinth, real people, not stone people, he's writing to them. They had real problems, bad problems, that made him look like a really ineffective missionary. I mean, if I told you, you know, I was a missionary once and my church that I pastored had all the problems that Paul, you'd think, why does anyone support you if that's what you're getting done? I mean, that's what it put Paul through. And he opens the letter and it's read publicly. I'm so thankful for you. Because he saw the value of their lives. But there's another way that we also need to see God in people and be thankful. Not only do we often ignore the natural ways that other Christians in our lives reflect the glory of God, we ignore something deeper and even greater, and that is the way that God is supernaturally at work in their lives. You know, sometimes you have to stop and remember this person has a problem, they have a personality issue, or this little kind of perpetual little sin thing that they keep dealing with all the time, and it's really frustrating to me, and I wish they'd stop, and it bothers me, and it lets me down. But we forget that person was a drug addict one day. That person couldn't even rub two pennies together one day without going down and spending it on the lottery. That person used to be a fighter. I mean, they wouldn't just raise their voice and like get a little worked up sometimes. They would punch you where your voice is supposed to come out and silence you that way and win. They physically injured people, and they have a history. the more you get to know each other, not only do you get to know how people are now, you should be getting to know how you were then. And we forget, Paul said when he's writing to some of these people, he would say things like, but you used to be like this. He remembered, and so he was gracious and long-suffering and patient because he remembered what they used to be like, really bad, now they're just a little bad. Because grace was at work in their life. Your kids have a thing that they're working on at any given point in time. But remember, that's a different thing, and it's more advanced than what it was last year. Remember that? Remember when you were working on with them last year? So be thankful you're working on something new now, and that thing is going well. Stop and realize the grace of God. Isn't that what Paul does? He's not just out of nowhere saying, I'm thankful for you. He gets the big picture of what God is doing. He says, I thank my God. This is back to our verse. Always concerning you for the grace of God, which was given to you. Just that a person has taken the bold step to believe on Jesus, step forward in baptism, and to start to follow Jesus, that's a big deal. So give space where there has been given grace. We have to remember the grace of God that was given. And so when this Christian in church says this, or your spouse does this, you know, here they go again. Why is this? Stop. Remember where they came from. Remember what it was like. Remember what they used to be before grace came into their place. And keep that focus and be grateful. It's not what it used to be. Grace has transformed their life, and it's still happening. Be grateful for that. Once again, think about the believers that bother you. Don't announce their name. And ask yourself the question, what were they in the past? What has God brought them through? How has grace transformed them? And be amazed. Thank God for that. And thank God that you get to witness that transformation and be a part of it. And pray to God that it continues. And say too, Lord, I hope that if I'm in someone else's head right now, that it's the same for me. Thanking God always. How do we do this? In conclusion, here is how you thank God for the Christians in your life and uncover His greatness and His goodness through that. Very simple. Don't forget it. Pray it and say it. You say, Pastor, I can't memorize. I always forget what you say when I'm preaching. Don't forget this. Pray it and say it. It comes right out of the passage. First of all, what does Paul say? I thank God. And if you go back and analyze the other passages that I read before, he says, I pray to God, or whenever I pray, or I thank God. If you can't, in your private thoughts, say to God, God, thank you for, and fill in the name without some bitter, resentful, awkward feelings coming in, you can't ever say it or show it to that person. It's fake. It's a fraud. It's not real. So think about the people, the other Christians that make Christian living a little tough for you, that make coming to church a little tough for you sometimes, or even going home a little tough for you sometimes. Think about those people. Be honest between you and God. Don't go to that person and say, I was thinking about you today when Pastor was preaching, and you are this person in my life, and I'm just telling you that I had to really spend time. Don't do that. Just go to God and talk to Him and get to a place where you can say, God, I have been so off. I have been tolerating this person. I have been frustrated with this person. I have been exasperated by this person. I've been probably doing that to other people. And here's what I want, God. I want you to change my mind. And then pause and think about how they show good things in the way that they're made about God and His greatness. And then think about how grace has changed their life. Say, God, thank you for so-and-so. Put the name in there. If you have to, go into a room and close the door and turn Alexa off and say it out loud and mean it. And then, once you've done that, which is what Paul did, I always thank God. I mean, this was a regular thing. He didn't let time go by and become resentful. He made it his habit to remain thankful. And when he sat down to write a letter to a church that had big problems and made him look really bad as a preacher, he was always able to start by saying, I'm thankful for you. Spouses, don't correct your spouse if you can't say that first to God. Don't go in and just correct them if you're not thankful for this person in the first place. Get your heart right. And it really affects how you say sometimes very difficult things you have to say in a Christian relationship. But if you're not thankful for the person, you're not going to pull it off well at all. But after that, Don't stay private. You pray it, but then you say it. How do we know that Paul did this and felt this way? Because he said it publicly. There's nothing wrong with saying thanks to anybody in public. Look at Romans chapter 16, and there are other places where he actually names people by name. Philippians chapter 2 is another one. He names an individual Christian, and he says thank you, and he praises that person for some quality or some deed that they did. And he doesn't go into this, oh, you know, we shouldn't really say thank you in public. He has no problem saying thank you because he knows what he's doing. He's revealing the grace, the greatness, and the goodness of God through this person. That's all he's doing. It's about God. Find ways to say it. First, make sure you can pray it. Then find ways to say it. There's one or two people you don't know so well yet, and so you really like them still. Still impressed by their Christianity. But there's a lot of other people you know really well now, and you know where their flaws are, and you're accepting them now. When's the last time you actually said, I'm so thankful for you? God is using you. And throw God into it, you know. I'm so thankful for how God is using you in my life. You are such a blessing to me. You know, and name how. Words of affirmation are powerful things. They affirm the grace of God. Sometimes that person is more aware of their problems than you are. And they're very tired of everybody being frustrated by them. And when someone comes along and reminds them of something good in them that is of God by creation or by salvation, it's deeply encouraging. Find someone who is difficult. Now, this is going to be a little awkward because if this next week someone in the church comes up to you and is really appreciative to you, you're going to say, okay, now I see what's going on here. So don't think too hard about this, but there's no way around it. You've got to be able to thank God through prayer for the people in your life that are Christians, and you've got to be able to say it. So just start the habit now. If we can do that in the month of November and grow in this, we genuinely bless and thank God for our food, and we genuinely thank God for the Christian people in our lives, all of them, we stop hiding God through thankfulness. We uncover His greatness and His goodness by giving thanks. Some of you know the name Fred Rogers or Mr. Rogers. Legend has it that he was genuinely a believer. I got a letter from Mr. Rogers when I was a kid. I wrote him a letter, and he wrote me a letter back, and I have his picture and that kind of thing. There's different opinions out there about Fred Rogers. Some people say if you grew up on Fred Rogers, you were off base. You know, you had to watch Barney and Friends and, you know, Transformers. I watched Mr. Rogers. That's what I liked, and Mr. Rogers was really good for me. My mom says I act like him sometimes. I don't know. But what can you say? I was reading some quotes this week of Fred Rogers. I posted one on Facebook, this one, and he appreciated people. He was able to look past. I mean, listen to his songs. Listen to the things he said. He lived his life being able to look past the broken noses and the fractured eyeballs and the missing color. He was able to see the specialness of each individual person. And as you get to know other Christians and you have high expectations for them because they're Christians in a church and in a family, we lose this. We lose this ability to see the value and the specialness of our Creator God in them and the grace of God that is in them. This is so good what he said, and it encapsulates. I actually found this after my sermon was pretty much done. He says, appreciation or giving thanks is a holy thing. When we look for what's best in the person we happen to be with at the moment, put in church, family, we're doing what God does, and that's true. So in appreciating our neighbor, we're participating in something truly sacred.
Thank you for tuning in to the preaching ministry of Faith Baptist Church. We are conveniently located in Corona, New York City, and are devoted to loving God and making disciples. For more resources and helpful information about our church, visit studygodsword.com. We'd also like to extend a personal invitation for you and your family to worship with us on Sunday at 10 o'clock in the morning, followed by a luncheon and an uplifting time of interactive Bible study for teenagers and adults after that. If you have young children, they will really enjoy our exciting Bible-based children's ministry that also occurs in the afternoon session. If you have any questions about the church or would like to learn more about how to have a personal relationship with God, please give us a call, or leave some feedback at studygodsword.com. We would be thrilled to meet you in person and show you firsthand what God is doing at Faith Baptist Church. Until next time, may God richly bless you. Thank you.